Hey! I think Muno really likes bugs. Look! There he is!
Hey! Look at that! It's a bug! No, no! It's okay! I like bugs! I like bugs! I like bugs! I like bugs! I like bugs!
What's that?
That's an ant!
What's that?
That's an ant! And ants crawl on the ground! Let's crawl like an ant! We'll crawl like an ant! Let's crawl along the ground! We're crawling! We're crawling! We're crawling like an ant! Yeah, we're crawling! We're crawling! We're crawling on the ground! I like bugs! I like bugs! I like bugs! I like bugs!
What's that?
That's a spider!
Welcome to Take 127 Overlooked on Ship Full of Bombs, Thames Delta Independent Radio, sfob.co.uk. Mike, what on earth was that?
I thought I'd set the scene for tonight's show. Don't you think?
It kind of does in a strange way, and it all will become clear to our valued listeners when they find out what the movies are. Mm. Okay, good. So, yes, my name is Dan. I'm your slightly bewildered host. Co-presenters are...
Kirk.
Hello, yes. Kirk.
Well, slightly bewildered as well.
Yeah. Mike, the permanently bewildered...
Yeah, hello, Mike. I'm Mike.
Hello.
I thought that was a cool sound.
I like the sound of it. And, of course, the man who, without... Oh, I'm still hungover. The man without whom the magic would not happen. It's our producer, Mr. Ian.
Thank you, Dan. You're too kind.
Thank you, Ian. Ah, so, yes, I like bugs.
Bugs.
So what is the theme, we wonder, for this month's show? Could it be... Bugs?
No.
Mm. It could, because it is. So, yes, that's the theme. Bugs. You know what? What we haven't decided is who's doing what film and who's going first. Can I have a volunteer? Kirk's going first.
Yeah, but apparently
Kirk,
I'm...
And you know which film you're doing?
Yes, I know apparently
marvelous,
what film I'm doing.
Marvellous. Yeah. So, okay, what is the film that you're going to be talking about?
Well, maybe unsurprisingly, given the... theme of tonight, it's called Bugs.
The film is called Bugs.
It's called Bugs.
No, it's not.
Bug.
It's called Bug.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Bug.
Blithering.
It's the song, it's confused me. Sorry, Bug. Yeah.
Bug.
Bug.
Oh, okay, yeah. Bug. What year was this?
Good question. 2006 it was.
Oh,
made.
Okay, 2006. So this is the William Friedkin film Bug. Not to be confused, there is another film called Bug, isn't there, from sort of the 1970s, so not to be confused with that one.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. All right, go on.
It's our old friend William who made an appearance on our first show.
Yeah, well, Bill to me.
Oh, Bill,
Yes, of course, because one of the very first films that we talked about was Sorcerer.
It was Sorcerer. Yeah.
Excellent.
So, yes.
Right, yeah, I'm going to stop interrupting you now. Go on.
Yeah, well, he holds a unique position in our show now because he's... on two shows now that we've featured his films. So, as opposed to our last show, which featured two films by George A. Romero.
Mm-hmm.
So, So, anyway, I'll shut up wobbling along and waffling and begin with a brief synopsis, if that's okay with you.
Please.
So, Bug. I said Bug, not Bugs. I'll start with the cast first because it's an interesting cast. So we've got Ashley Judd, the lovely Ashley Judd, playing a character called Agnes White. We've got Michael Shannon playing a character called Peter Evans. We've got Lynn Collins playing a character called RC. And we've got Brian F. O'Brien playing Dr. Sweet. And finally, we've got Harry Connick Jr. playing Jerry Goss. Yes, Harry Connick Jr. acting.
Mm.
So, anyway, I'll begin with a synopsis. Basically, having escaped her abusive ex-husband, Goss, the aforementioned Harry Connick Jr., recently released from state prison. Agnes, a lonely waitress with a tragic past, moves into a sleazy rundown motel called Rustic Motel. Her lesbian co-worker, RC, introduces her to Peter, a peculiar paranoid war veteran drifter, and they begin a tentative romance. However, things aren't always as they appear, and Agnes is about to experience a claustrophobic nightmare reality as the bugs begin to arrive. So, that's the synopsis.
Okay. Yeah. So, tell me more about this movie. Tell the listeners more.
Well,
about this
movie. It's basically it's based on a play that was written by Tracy Letts, who was part of the Chicago Steppenwolf Theatre, for those that might know their theatre.
Oh, Steppenwolf. Wasn't that Gary Sinise, John Malkovich,
yes.
And that bunch of guys?
Yes,
who else?
That's right.
There were some others.
There were some others, yeah. But it's a very famous theatre. Yeah. And Tracy Letts wrote this play that became quite a success. And William Friedkin got hold of the script and decided to turn it into a film. And he actually used one of the stars of the play to appear in the film, which was actually Michael Shannon. So, in effect, this is one of Michael Shannon's, I suppose, key roles.
Yeah.
In his film career, based on his performance in the play Bug.
I think certainly it was the first time I ever saw him in a movie, and his performance in this film, I was just like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
He's fantastic. He's one to watch. And I think the next film I remembered seeing him in was Take Shelter.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, I was just like, oh, it's that guy again. And he's amazing in this as well.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he went on, I think the pinnacle of his career, of course, was playing General Zod in Man of Steel.
Yes, that's right.
fantastic
I knew
actor.
I knew him from somewhere.
Absolutely amazing actor. Yeah. I love him.
Oh, he is brilliant. I suppose something of a late bloomer, because this film was made in 2006.
Yeah.
Jeff Bridges had to fight for him because the studio wanted a star.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Friedkin had to go back for him.
Ooh,
so there you go.
Good little fact there.
Yeah. And I'm glad he did as well, because what a performance.
Yeah, it was a brilliant performance. Yeah.
What, as General Zod?
Yes, obviously. Yeah,
yeah. Well, that goes without saying, yeah. So, basically, to build on the synopsis a little bit, the whole film is pretty much filmed within one set, which is the motel room, the Rustic Motel, which is so aptly named. It's a very claustrophobic place because the motel room is effectively a large bedroom with a tiny lounge area and a kitchenette in there. And that is about it. I want a bathroom, of course, as well. And that is about the whole set. There's a few little external shots, and there's another shot in a honky-tonk, a lesbian honky-tonk, where the two female stars actually work in. But that is basically the whole of the film sets and scenery. That is where it's filmed. So just to lay a bit of groundwork there on how this film was made. So all of it is in this prefabricated studio motel room, and it does give an air of claustrophobia. It really you get a sense of nothing else in the outside world going on, because everything takes place in this particular room. Interesting.
And then there were some interesting little choices in it, aren't there? At one point I don't know how much of this we're giving away in terms of the plot, but basically Michael Shannon's character, he's paranoid delusions, you could call them.
Yeah.
They start to, ironically, infest Ashley Judd's character's mind. And she starts to kind of believe in some of these things he's saying. And because there's this belief that the military are after him and all this kind of thing, at one point, the hotel room or the motel room is shaking because of a helicopter outside, a military Black Ops helicopter that has tracked them down, and the whole room's shaking, and it's like, oh my God. And then you get a shot outside the motel, and it's absolutely calm and peaceful, and nothing is happening out there at all. So it is this kind of interesting little self-contained ecosystem in a way, isn't it, the motel room?
It is.
Where, you know, anything goes in their in their minds. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mike, how many bits of music have we got? I'm just wondering if it's worth throwing in a little bit of music and then...
Yeah, fine, okay.
Talking a bit about what we think about this movie.
Okay. Let's start with, well, for Ian, it's track 6. And it's displays over the end credits. It's Chris Cornell, Disappearing Act. And, of course, Chris Cornell died a couple of weeks back. So that's a nice little tribute to him.
Oh.
Yeah, Chris Cornell, Disappearing Act.
Come on now, the curtain is drawn, and tomorrow stands before you, dressed and draped in a cold black cape like a crow. He ignores you. Look again, there's a beautiful girl, covers him in a holy land smile. It's the great disappearing act, done once again for the mob. Crowd, as we're chasing our tails, biting our nails, so strong and frail. And we build and tear down, build and tear down, build and tear down, with the time to say, how did it get so late? Outside now, the doors open wide, and the minions are eager to find him. Put a million miles under your heels, and you're still behind him. Cover your clocks with your chains and your locks while the seasons get hotter and colder. Ages and still, oh, we're gonna get older. I'll be chasing our tails, biting our nails, so strong and frail. Thank you.
interestingly, there we were just talking about that track, and I said, wow, this has almost got a feel of a bit of a Bond theme to it. And Kirk, you said...
Yeah, it's actually, he sang for Casino Royale. The Daniel Craig version.
Yeah. And which I didn't realise. Interesting. Mm. So, Kirk, you've given us a bit of background of the movie, and there's been a few interesting little snippets.
Mm.
Talk to me about it. What do you think? What do you reckon on this? Is it any good or not? A load of rubbish?
No, I didn't think it was a load of rubbish. I thought it was quite a brilliant piece of film work, actually. I thought it was very clever, like minimal cast, and I kind of like these kind of films, even though, you know, some people might sniff that, you know, oh, the play's better or something if they've seen the play, but I actually thought this was a clever piece of film work in that it really brings out the idea of paranoia completely. I don't think, other than the only other film I can think that might be more paranoid, or two other films maybe, is like Rosemary's Baby and maybe something like Jacob's Ladder or something. It just really plays into that paranoia powerfully. And Michael Shannon is just absolutely incredible. Mm. He's just so, you know, just so dark. I mean, he starts off quite passive, and the Ashley Judd character, Agnes... you know, she's lonely and down and out, and she's just looking for love. And, you know, although she kind of isn't looking for love, and then she is, and that's kind of part of what happens during the film. And it's just so powerful, you know, it's just so powerful. And he says he's not looking for love, and he hasn't had sex for, you know, ages, and he's not interested. And then suddenly some spark ignites, and... you know, and then it ends up into a sort of romance, I suppose, or some sort of, you know, small time relationship. Mm. But no, I thought it was a very powerful film. The kind of themes of it are very sort of Philip K. Dick-ish, maybe, or William Burroughs, or there's something that reminds me of those authors about this film. If that makes sense for those that have seen it here. I thought it was incredible. Ashley Judd, absolutely brilliant. I mean, can't fault her. She's a very powerful character as well. Very believable.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's interesting you talk about kind of companion piece films. I think, Mike, you remember one of the themes that we did on the main Take 127 show was about cults.
Yeah.
And like Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, Faults, and a third film. Oh, and Holy Smoke, which we'll forget about. I think this, ironically, would work quite well with Faults or Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, because it's almost got an element of kind of cult behaviour to it, hasn't it? Where you've got somebody who's a bit damaged, and they're being gradually brainwashed, if you like, by a fairly charismatic and totally unhinged individual. So this is almost like, whereas with Faults and Martha, Marcy, May, and Marlene, where you're seeing somebody coming out the other end of a cult experience, this is almost the beginning of that, seeing somebody being drawn into believing in something quite bizarre. So, yeah, I don't know what you think on that. Does that make any sense? You look like you don't care, frankly.
Well, I just, because I saw the film, I didn't know anything about this film. It totally passed me by. I had no idea what it was. So when I stuck it in the player, I didn't know what to expect, really. Mm. And the film kept changing. And one of the things that I like most in the film is that I did not know where it was going.
Mm.
So talking a lot about the themes is, if I knew what the themes are, perhaps I wouldn't have enjoyed it quite so much. So it can't, the whole talking about it is a bit of a spoiler, if you like. But the whole descent into madness theme, I mean, it's basically the two people almost become one.
Mm.
And it reminds me like a David Cronenberg thing. It reminds me of Twins, where it's a descent into madness, that's what it is. But I didn't know what that it was. That I thought it might be just a monster movie about bugs when I saw it. The cover of the DVD certainly suggests a Cronenberg type body horror movie, and you don't get that at all. It's all because there's it's all in the whole film is in the characters' minds. And I don't know if I've seen any film quite like it. I've seen films with similar themes. I've mentioned Cronenberg, and Cronenberg's Spider is a bit like this. It's a descent into madness. Descent into madness is not an uncommon theme, but I do think this film does that thing spectacularly well.
Yeah.
And it really, I loved it.
I must admit, for my money, I think it should be regarded as one of Friedkin's finest films. Bearing in mind that controversially, I don't particularly rate The French Connection. I think, obviously, The Exorcist has got to be in the list somewhere. Sorcerer, I think, amazing. As you said, we've already covered it. I think Bug is probably in the top three Friedkin films that he's ever made. And to be fair, he hasn't made a huge amount of films, has he? Yeah, I think it's an absolute cracker. I love it.
Yeah. It's kind of weird, because I knew so little about this film, then I thought, it must have bombed when it came out. But it didn't really bomb. It did okay. It came out at the same time, and it was number four at the time, behind Pirates of the Caribbean 3, Shrek 3, and Spider-Man 3.
Good grief.
I mean, that's, some big hitters there.
Yeah.
And to hang in with that crowd, business-wise, it done business somewhere.
Yeah.
And yet it seems to have disappeared, really. And people don't... If people talk about freaking films, they rarely talk about this film. People talk about horror films, rarely talk about this film. People talk about themes of madness, rarely talk about this film. And I agree with you, Dan. I think it's up with Friedkin's very best. It's just a marvellous film. It really took me by surprise how much I loved it. Because I didn't... Well, I normally either do know what I love or at least know something that... And it's almost fighting its, I bet it's not going to be as good as people say it is. But people don't talk about this film. It's a marvellous choice for this overlooked show because it is totally overlooked.
Yeah, totally.
And it is a hidden gem. It's
marvellous, marvellous film.
Yeah.
But don't read too much about it. If you are intrigued and want to see it, try to forget what we said. And just see it, and just see it unfold in front of you. It's spectacularly good. The acting is.
Oh.
I mean, Ashley Judge is not someone that I've really had much time for, but she is magnificent.
They're both really physical performances as well, and I'd imagine very emotionally draining during the filming as well. I mean, I didn't actually see any reports about how they went into this, but certainly when you see them on screen, it is so physical.
Actually, because it's all on one set, there's no big logistics to work out. They shot it all in sequence, so their madness was easier to portray. Because I don't know how long the shoot was. It wasn't a massive budget film, and it probably wasn't a massive shoot.
Yeah, so they
shot it all in
shot
seconds.
It in contents and
so when it all goes absolutely barky and mad, they've actually built up to that. Marvelous film.
Yeah, brilliant.
I think it's something that I found interesting about it was the fact that there's some stuff that happens, kind of beginning-ish, middle-ish. So in the first sort of third, maybe. Where you're thinking, oh, he's not quite right. There's something going on here. What's happening? And he starts talking about bugs in his blood. And you're just like, oh, yeah, so he's obviously a bit crazy. And then at one point he takes off his shirt to reveal all of these lesions on his skin. And for a moment watching it, I was like, oh my God, is this, is there genuinely something happening to him physically that's, and you almost, at the beginning, you're almost starting to wonder if he's telling the truth, whether there is a bit of truth to what he's saying, which I think is quite clever, because then you can understand how her character did buy into what he was saying, and that he gradually kind of drip fed her information to the point where, you know, you go from A, he seems a little odd and he's got some strange ideas, to Z, he's a complete, he's completely loopy and a danger to himself and others. And you can kind of see how she got to Z with him. So I thought that was quite interesting.
I think it's a really exceptional way how they totally wrong foot you, because when you go in, you see the sort of violent husband coming out of jail and visiting, and the phone calls going on. You just expect a totally different film, and it doesn't give you that film at all. And I think it's
because the
superb what they do give you instead.
You mentioned the phone, because obviously that's the opening scene, isn't it, with Ashley Judd while she's lying in bed, and there's just a telephone ringing, and she's not picking up the phone. So, you know, by the title of the film, you know, if you haven't seen it before, you're kind of thinking, bug, is this about telephone bugs? Or, you know, it could surveillance bugs, that kind of thing. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's kind of why it's a bit ambivalent, the title as well, because it could mean surveillance as well, which feeds into that paranoia.
Yeah.
I wanted to note another scene, actually, which I thought was an interesting scene that sort of leads to something that's not quite right about Michael Shannon's character as well, and that's with the smoke detector in the room, in the motel room, and they hear it beeping, and it's insistent, and they look everywhere around the room, and they think
it's a cricket.
They think it's a cricket, yeah. And then they sort of find out that it is this smoke detector that's batteries failed or something, and Michael Shannon sort of takes it apart, and then he starts describing how the detector's made and some of the elements that are in it. And he says something like, there's radioactive material in it or something. Yeah. And Ashley Judd very naively is going, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's terrible, you know. And very naive kind of scene from her. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because I think that gives you a little tantalising glimpse of what is to come, really. If that makes sense.
Although, interestingly, I've got a feeling that smoke detectors do actually contain some kind of probably quite mildly radioactive elements.
Oh, so he wasn't just being paranoid in that particular...
No. Oh, right, you know what, okay. To the extent, I'm going to Google it now.
I think that's so good, because his madness, he's not presented as madness straight away. He seems genuinely... like a good guy. You think the bad husband is going to be the bad guy, and he's going to be the hero. It just don't go down that road,
does it?
No. I mean, Harry Connick Jr.'s character, who is the bad guy, sort of, you know, he does come across as a really nasty guy and a very unpredictable character when he walks in the room, and you just kind of wonder what's going to happen. But events turn out to be something completely different. So go on then.
Just out of interest, yes, there is one type of smoke detector which uses an element called americium 241, which emits alpha particles and low energy gamma rays. The alpha particles are absorbed within the detector, while most of the gamma rays escape harmlessly.
Right.
So there's actually, which again I think is clever, because as soon as they said that in the film, I thought, oh, actually, he's right about that, because I've read that somewhere. So again, there's kind of an element of reality to what he's saying. You're just like, yeah, he's coming across as being a bit crazy, but actually, some of the things he's talking about are true.
Yeah.
So he's kind of built his delusion on a foundation of some truth. Interesting.
That is interesting.
You know what? We've spent 30 minutes now discussing this film. So perhaps we should have a bit of music and then move on to the next film. Ultimately, though, we are saying that William Friedkin's Bug from 2006. That's worth a watch.
Definitely worth a watch. Yeah.
Kirk, you're our resident expert. How is this available? DVD, Blu-ray?
As far as I know, only DVD. I don't think it's out on Blu-ray at all. So, find your nearest thrift shop and try and get hold of
it. Pick one up. And I think you can pick it up online, can't you, for fairly cheap money, sort of, £5-6, something like that. So, well worth a go.
Yeah.
Mike, what music are we going to have?
Well, the next is also on the soundtrack. It's and by another guy who died fairly recently as well. A guy called Scott Weiland, I think. He used to be in the Stone Temple Pilots. And it's a song called Beautiful Day.
Beautiful Day. Lovely. Okay, let's have a crack at that. Who was that again, Mike?
Scott Weiland.
Scott Weiland.
Yeah.
Beautiful Day. Marvellous.
He died from overdose.
Yeah, heroin. Oh, okay. Overdose, yeah.
May or may not have been intentional.
Mm.
I understand.
Oh, okay.
Not that I'm, you know, up on that kind of thing.
Not an expert.
Not an expert. No.
Sure.
something you are an expert on, Mike, is films, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So shall we move on to the next film that we're going to be discussing? Well, the second and final film that we're going to be discussing. What film is that?
It's a film called Bug, Dan.
Bug?
Bug.
Really? What year?
It's 1975.
Oh, so not to be confused with the 2006 William Friedkin.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it really worth it?
No, it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it. Okay.
The whole show is building up to that game.
It was. That's yeah. it. We might as well. We might as well end it now.
Yeah.
Call it a night. Put a bit more music on. I'm sure you've got some music there recorded by somebody who's died in horrific circumstances. So yeah, go on. Tell us a little bit about Bug.
Bug. Okay. Bug. Directed by Gino
Schwark. Schwark. Yes, it's another Polish name. Yeah. See, we get lots of Polish names.
We do, yeah.
He's best known for he's done a ton of TV, but he did make Jaws 2 and Supergirl, so he's had some budgets.
And Santa Claus, the movie.
Is that one film, Jaws 2 and Supergirl?
No, you're thinking Jaws 2 versus Supergirl.
Oh, okay, right, yes, so I apologise. That was the name of the shark, wasn't it, as well, Jaws 2. That's his real name. Very unimaginative parents, the Jaws family. I've got no idea what I'm banging on about. Go on, you carry on.
Okay. Right then. Produced and co-written by William Castle. And if you know William Castle, you know Castle was famous for tricks like Emerjo in The House on Haunted Hill, when a plastic skeleton flew over the audience. Percepto, when he gave the audiences a mild electric shock because he electrified the cinema chairs. That's the tingler. The tingler was in, he electrified the cinema chairs. Sorry about that.
4D.
Anyway, so William Cart, but he also produced Rose from His Baby. So there you go. Okay. He's the full gamut of stuff. He's done. Anyway, back to the film, Bug. So, that weren't me. No. The film stars Bradford Dillman, also best known for TV. But he's been in quite a few dodgy films like Piranha, Swarm, More Insects.
Yeah.
And he was in Compulsion with Orson Welles.
Was he now?
Yeah. Mm. Got a Cannes Award for that film. So,
There you go.
Blimey.
Anyway.
Did he win any awards for this film?
Anyway, shall I give you a synopsis? That's kind of who's in it and who made it. So I'll do you a little synopsis. An earthquake in a small Californian town releases a bunch of mutant cockroaches that can create fire. That's it. That's all you need to know, really. But that isn't all you need to know, because if you think it's that type of movie, you're wrong. Because it begins like a disaster film, like an eco-disaster film, and you've got really good scenes, actually, of these bugs creating, lighting fires, so like jeeps go up in flames and people go on fire and they kill a cat in a nasty way. It's a real cat, but it's a dead cat. So, it's done tastefully for cinema. It's not,
No cats were harmed.
It might have been before they started filming, but not during the film. Anyway, so you think you know where it's going. It's like an eco-disaster movie, the 50s, 60s, early 70s, full of them. You think you know what's happening, and it does turn into a monster movie, and then it evolves into a mad scientist movie out of nowhere. It's terrific, because this is kind of a spoiler, but I think I might have to say, because it happens early enough that it's not a real spoiler, but about a third, maybe a halfway through, of these monster bugs on the loose, they start dying. And you can't do that in a horror film about bugs. Mm. They start dying. Because they can't survive in the low air pressure, because they've all but come out from the earth, from deep, deep in the bowels of the earth during this earthquake. So they're roaming about, setting people on fire. Then they all start dying off. This is where our mad scientist tale comes in, because the teacher, this is our Brad Dillman, he keeps one alive in a pressure chamber, and he starts trying to breed them with modern bugs to create an intelligent flying superbug.
Hmm.
It's not really said why he's trying to do that. And that's part of the charm of this really quirky film, I think. I think it's marvellous. It's a shambles, really. It's a bit of a mess. It's all over the place. And I love it to bits. I think it's terrific. And seeing Dillman as the professor, who's slightly scatty at the start, and then he totally loses his grip on sanity, it's just a marvellous acting turn. I love it to bits. So this is very much a companion piece to the other bug we talked about. It's another film about a descent into madness. Because they're like... Although in this film, it's not all in his head, because there is some actual shocks that you do see on camera. So it's more traditional in that respect. But I love it. I love it. I love this film.
There are some lovely scenes in it as well, aren't there? I mean, you mentioned right at the beginning about the earthquake, and there's a great scene where you've got a church full of people and the earthquake occurs, and it is very much kind of like small town America, and the church is kind of probably 10 miles from the nearest building, and there's this scene where the earthquake hits and all these people are in this little church. And I was really impressed by the special effects, where you've got kind of like, you know, the floor is rolling with the earthquake and things are falling down. And it was like, my God, it's like, I hope they didn't spend all of the budget just on this scene, because it's really very effective.
And then you find out they did.
They very much did. And I think also it's worth saying that the bugs themselves, initially, when you think, hang on, cockroaches that can set fire to things, turns out that's not quite what they do. They've got kind of a couple of little protuberances underneath their carapace, which static electricity kind of passes between these two protuberances. And so that static electricity is enough to light things. So there already has to be a combustible element for them to kind of, do their business.
Oh, thanks for adding that technical note there. I'm sure the listener would be worried about how many soup bugs create fires. I'm sure sound that realistic to me.
Was interested by it because, strangely, with this movie, you just think cockroaches that can set fire to things. It's like, oh, okay.
And you can't just go with that.
But what they do is they try really hard, bless them, to give it some kind of scientific grounding to the point that you go, oh, you know what? I love these guys so much that they've gone to the effort to try and explain how this works that I'm going to pretend that it does work. And I'm going to go with it. I admired that rather than just saying, yeah, bugs that start fires, deal with it. They try and give you a bit of something behind it, and I admired them for that. I loved them for it. So, where are we? Is it time for a little bit of music, and then perhaps we'll go to Kirk and see what Kirk made of this ramshackle nonsense?
Well, I should mention that Bug actually contains no real music. This bug, I say, it's kind of got electronic score, a bit sort of Forbidden Planet-ish, except without the theremin. So it's just like. Nothing at all.
I need to talk about the composer, though. For those that need those listeners out there who might be interested, it's electronic music and it's very abstract and odd. And it's by a guy called Charles Fox, who also composed the music to Barbarella, which is quite an interesting soundtrack if you've ever heard it. Also, weirdly, co-composed Happy Days, Fonzie, and Wonder Woman, and The Love Boat.
It's me. Okay.
But also, this is the real surprise, he also co-composed Killing Me Softly, sung by Roberta Flack, and of course, later on The Fugees, which I just thought, my God, I never saw that in this music at all.
That's a rather eclectic mix.
It's very eclectic.
Charles Fox.
Charles Fox.
Charles Fox. Oh, wow. with all that, you might wonder what the hell of all that of Charles Fox that I've chosen. And I haven't chosen any of that because it's all that electronic rubbish in the
Which it's very film, abstract.
It fits the film exactly as it should. It's beautifully, it's a beautiful soundtrack for what it is. But you can't sort of sit and listen to it.
No, taken out of context, the value is diminished somewhat.
I mean, it's like, I suppose it's like Stockhausen or something like that. It's just
Stockhausen.
Very, Stockhausen. Stockhausen. Sorry, my German's not up to
screen. Karl Heinz. me and Karl Heinz go back. You know. Anyway, so I've chosen a piece of music from The Other Bug, and... and it fits kind of well, really, because it's called Shake 'em Up and Let 'em Roll by the Coasters.
Lovely.
Sitting in the blue light diner, knowing life could be much finer. Nothing here but beer and a bunch of men. But I'm so down I can't be choosy. And here come old side order Susie. Shake 'em up and let 'em roll. Let 'em roll again. Walking in a drive-in movie, a wishing life could be more groovy. Like to share the back seat with a friend. The headlights flashing in my mirror. Lordy, ain't that rear view mirror. Shake 'em up and let 'em roll again. Shake 'em up, let 'em roll. Got a woman with a lot of soul. Shake 'em up and let 'em roll. Hanging in the bowling alley, I wandered into Dilly Dally. Bought me a comb and a package of Sin Sin. Combing my hair in the plate glass window. Gonna get lucky with Lucky Linda. Shake 'em up and let 'em roll. Let 'em roll again. Met her at the Crystal Palace. Me that her name was Alice. I just lied and said my name was Glim. I squeezed her and she started screaming. Turned out that her name was Herman. Shake 'em up and let 'em roll. Let 'em roll again. Said, shake 'em up, let 'em roll. Got a woman with a lot of soul. Shake 'em up and let 'em roll. Let 'em roll again. At reading lonely, looking for my one and only. Call this number evenings after 10. Got there just in time for dinner. She can't cook, but she's a winner. Shake 'em up and let 'em roll. Let 'em roll again. Shake 'em up, let 'em roll. Got a woman with a lot of soul. Shake 'em up and let 'em roll.
Oh, that was fun.
Well, that's better than 2 minutes of electronic dribbles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think as Kirk and myself just said there, that was kind of like the illegitimate child of the Sesame Street theme and everything that Mungo Jerry ever did, which was one song, I think.
Oh, I think it was one song, wasn't it? Yeah.
Thank you for that, Mike.
Yeah.
No, really, thank you. That was wonderful.
My dismissed.
Yes, you may go. Kirk, what did you think of Bug 1975
version? 1975 version.
Yeah, that's not like Airport 1977.
Point two, the Fast and the Furious 8.
No, yeah, Die Hard. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, moving swiftly
on. What do you think?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, it's got it's definitely a B movie feel about it, you know. Actually, remarked the church scene. I thought the effects were really good. I thought it was so well done. I also thought the actual bugs were really well done. I didn't go into depths to do any research on how they did that, but they actually looked like real bugs. Whether they were cockroaches wearing costumes, I don't know. But well-trained cockroaches, if that's possible. But no, I just thought, it's definitely B-movie territory, as I say. But it goes into a few themes, the mad scientist theme that we've talked about. So, you know, there are elements of maybe Cronenberg's The Fly that might have been influenced by this, maybe somewhere down the line. Because the main character, the doctor at the college who starts experimenting with these bugs, I mean, it just goes in a completely different tangent to what you're expecting, you know, because you do expect it to be a monster movie or a bug movie, if you like, and it goes somewhere else. And it's I don't want to give any spoilers away because I want the listeners to enjoy this film themselves if they can. But the ending is very odd. It's got such an odd ending. I was almost speechless at the end, to be honest. It was okay.
It's quite similar to Phase 4, actually.
Yeah,
the one about the ants.
Yes.
I like my insect movies. You know.
But yeah, you know, like for people that like those mad scientist films, it's definitely got those elements in it, you know. Alien Covenant maybe is in there, you know, and a few other films have followed since, you know.
Alien Covenant?
Alien Covenant.
Why'd you say that?
That might be spoilers for people that haven't seen Alien Covenant. Mad scientist experimentation.
I think most people know what happens in Alien Covenant now.
Do they?
Because it's not much of a spoiler, though, is it? Because it's such a bad movie.
Oh, so anyway, we're not here to talk about it.
No.
Mainly because you're wrong and it was superb. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Anyway.
Yes. So, yeah, my feeling is it's definitely a film worth watching. You know, don't go in there with high expectations because it's a mid-70s film. So, you know,
I love that. I love that as a little kind of like a little warning. But don't go into it with high expectations because you will be bitterly disappointed.
Well, I'm
if
just
you go
thinking,
into it with low expectations.
No,
you,
I'm thinking
you might be okay.
It kind of reminds me of films like Duel. You know, and as everyone famously knows, Duel was made for TV. It wasn't ever a cinema film, you know, Spielberg's first foray into film, as it were. And it has that kind of feel about it, just the way it's made and put together.
It might be because the director was based with TV and did loads of Kojak and cop shows. So, yeah, I agree. It does actually look like one of those weird 70s TV films. And that's the lower cast then. Well, no, Bradford Dillman, he's TV, so I agree, Kirk. You're such an astute person. I bow to you.
I'm inclined to... Sorry, I'll come back to you in a second. I'm inclined to think watching this film, it's the first time I'd ever seen it, I'm surprised by the quality of it and the ideas in it. I'm surprised that it's not a cult classic. One of those movies that actually a fair few people who are serious about movies have heard of, and has had a few DVD releases and things like that, and Arrow have done a box set of it and that kind of thing. But I'd never heard of this until you mentioned it, and I really liked it. I thought it was really very good, and I'm a bit disappointed that it hasn't got a higher status than it has.
Another great overlooked choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so.
Yeah.
God, we're good, aren't we?
We are. We're really good.
No, we really are brilliant.
Good. Yeah. I mean, not to be self-congratulatory, but we're bloody fantastic. So, Kirk.
Yeah, I've got some trivia, which is really amused me, actually.
Always like trivia. Is it about this movie?
It is about this movie.
All the better.
Yeah, it's not about football or something else, no. Okay. And it's basically about the set. One of the main sets in the film is in at the doctor's house, and it's basically filmed in a living room and a kitchen area. And it's the same kitchen and living room set that was used in The Brady Bunch. Which just made me laugh when I found that out. It was just
kind of cool.
Yeah, and they didn't even redecorate.
No, it's the same. It's the same set. So for Brady Bunch fans out there, you know, you'll love this film.
Brady Bunch aficionados. Yes, well, there's a little Easter egg in there just for you guys.
Yeah. So no, I just thought that was brilliant. And another bit I must mention: one of the female characters in it, an actress called Joanna Miles. She was absolutely petrified of insects and cockroaches, etc., and didn't want them crawling over her. And there's a big scene in there where she actually has them crawling over her. And the producer, William Castle, tried to demonstrate that cockroaches were harmless, and he had one crawl on his arm just to demonstrate the fact, and the cockroach bit him. Which, okay, I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. The sad ending to that story is that he did contract sepsis and later died. But, you know, it makes for an amusing anecdote.
It does.
Magnificent. Mm. So, again, Bug then, 1975. Worth a look.
Oh, definitely. I think it's an epitome of a cult movie.
As
you said, why isn't it already considered midnight showings cult movie? I don't know. It should be.
Absolutely.
Yeah, midnight movie, definitely in that territory. Totally. You know? And it should be, you know, when I mentioned Jewel's highly regarded as a cult classic, you know, I mean, probably because it's Spielberg. But this should be up there, I think. I mean, it's one of those films that should be as powerful as that.
Yeah,
you know.
It should have a wider audience. Yeah, it definitely doesn't get the recognition that it deserves. Mm. Availability, absolutely not on Blu-ray.
No.
I think the DVD that we managed to pick up, isn't it like an Italian or Spanish?
Italian copy.
So, yeah, so it's an Italian copy, so you can kind of pick it up. You might pay a 7 or 8 quid for it on whatever website you
Amazon
prefer.
Amazon Italy, probably.
Or Amazon, just the normal Amazon. Yeah. Also, possibly eBay, it might come up occasionally. Mm. Or you can just ask Mike if you can borrow his copy. I'm sure he'd be happy to lend it. Yeah. Cracking. Marvellous. Yeah. Is that us done talking about Bug films? Two absolute stonkers there, I think.
I
love them both.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, there was one thing from the previous Bug, the 2006 Bug. I have to make a little quote here, and this is a quotation from the film, and this is Ashley Judd's character, Agnes, and she says, "You don't sound like you're from Oklahoma." And Peter, the paranoid soldier or military man, says, "I'm from Beaver." And then Agnes says, "Well, we're all from Beaver, ain't we?" Which just made me really laugh. In the context of the film, I just thought it was hilarious.
What's that mean then?
We'll tell you later, Mike.
Yeah, let's play a bit of music while we explain to Mike about special cuddles.
Yeah.
All that came across really, really sinister, didn't it? And unpleasant. I do apologise about that. Mike, let's play some music so that I stop talking.
Last bit of music then. Is the Chainsaw Kittens, and it's called Kit Kid, and it sounds a bit like the Undertones. So there you go.
Marvellous. Let's have a listen to that. We will bid you adieu, folks.
Adieu.
Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
like it's a moon.